Today we're talking with Catherine Phillips, who is the Director of Research for Adult Psychiatry and Senior Research Scientist at Rhode Island Hospital. She's also a professor at the Alpert Medical School of Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Today our topic is an update on the DSM-5. Dr. Phillips, why don't you explain what the DSM is and remind us of the role that it plays for clinicians?
Mm-hmm. Well, the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, is the diagnostic manual for mental disorders. So it provides definitions, in other words, based on diagnostic criteria for mental disorders, which in turn allows clinicians to make accurate diagnoses. And I think what's important is making the right diagnosis leads to more appropriate and hopefully more effective treatment. So the DSM does have a major impact on patient care around the world.
And what has been involved in the development of the DSM-5, this edition?
Well, this has been a very large an effort, an international effort that has been going on officially since 2007, since the late 1990s, groundwork for the development of DSM-5 has been laid. So this involves basically making changes to the current version of DSM, which is DSM-4, in preparation for the publication of the next version of DSM, which is DSM-5, will be published in 2013, so next year sometime. And this has been an international effort involving many, many people. There's a task force that oversees the entire effort. There are work groups with many members that tend to be sort of disorder focused on specific disorders. There are study groups that address very important issues like representation of gender issues in DSM and cross-cultural issues. Many, many advisors. There are participants in field trials. So the field trials have taken proposed changes for DSM-5 and examined them out in clinics across the country and to see are the proposed changes reliable? Are they valid? What do clinicians think of them? It's a test run of some of the proposed criteria. That has been a big effort to involve many, many people. We've gotten thousands of comments and input from people around the world, clinicians, researchers, people with these disorders, family members, comments and input on our proposed changes, which have been posted twice on DSM5.org. And so everyone who commented has been part of the process too, because those comments have been very carefully reviewed and have been very, very helpful to us. Also, this DSM-5 development effort is a collaborative effort with the World Health Organization, which publishes the International Classification of Diseases. That's another classification system, diagnostic system for all disorders, including mental disorders. And the goal has been to to try to harmonize the ICD and the DSM-5. So it's been a very big effort.
So that's the approach that's been used, to an all-encompassing international,
yes,
from every population, anybody who might be affected. What have the principles and guidelines for revision been?
Well, primarily, the goal has been to base any proposed changes to the definitions of disorders, to the diagnostic criteria, to base those proposed changes on scientific evidence. And so we have done many, many, many reviews of the published scientific data from journal articles that would be relevant to some of the changes we're proposing to make, because we want these proposed changes to be based on what has been learned about mental disorders since DSM-4 was developed in the early 1990s. We have also, as I mentioned, conducted the field trials to collect information on how well the proposed criteria are doing in clinical settings. We have done additional analyses of scientific data that's already been collected by researchers around the world Often we can use that existing data to answer specific questions that we have about changes we're thinking may be merited. And also we've gotten, as I mentioned, tremendous input from many, many advisors and experts around the world.
Can you give a little idea of what kind of input your work group has gotten on the proposed changes?
Sure. My work group alone has gotten more than 1,000 comments just from the first posting on DSM5.org, and then there's been a second posting, and now there's going to be a third posting in May. You know, what's been helpful is some of the comments raised some issues that we hadn't really thought that much about, although we've thought tremendously about many issues for many years, but they raised some good points that led us to then look into the question that was raised and think about whether, you know, whether a change was warranted based on some of these comments. There were some very helpful suggestions. There were, of course, some criticisms. But these are also helpful because they made us stop and think, you know, take another look at the data that is, you know, supporting the change that we want to make, and take a closer look at it. Ask, have we missed some data that's out there? And then we got quite a large number of very positive comments, I think especially for some of the new disorders that my work group has proposed to add to DSM-5.
What kinds of changes are being proposed in the larger sense, the big picture overview?
Well, so some of the major changes would be to the diagnostic criteria themselves, which make up the definition of each disorder in DSM. Then there are things called specifiers and subtypes. So once a person meets the diagnostic criteria for a disorder, the specifiers add a little bit more detail. They kind of identify an important subgroup of people with the disorder. So an example would be for obsessive-compulsive disorder, we're proposing to add a tic-related specifier, because people who have OCD plus tic, plus a tic disorder, differ in some clinically important ways from those who don't. And then in particular, there's some slight differences in treatment that a clinician may want to take with these patients. We've proposed some new disorders that have substantial scientific evidence behind them. A few are being deleted because it was thought that they were, you know, either very rare, very little work has been done on them, and they were thought to perhaps be a better example of what's called a not otherwise specified category, but not necessarily meriting a separate designation as a separate disorder. There's a real increased focus on cultural-related issues, gender-related issues, and developmental issues. The overall organization of DSM, the chapters in DSM, will change somewhat, and the way in which they're organized will change a bit. Of course, we'll update and expand the text, so that's the descriptions of the disorders that accompany the diagnostic criteria, which are very, very helpful and provide a nice overview of many important aspects of these disorders. So that will all be updated to reflect current knowledge of these disorders. And some scales to measure severity of disorders and symptoms like depression and anxiety symptoms will probably be added.
Can you address anything about whether a new section on OCD and related disorders will be included?
Yes, so there is a proposal to add a new category, a new chapter of disorders called obsessive, compulsive, and related disorders. This is a concept that has been around for about 20 years, widely adopted by the field, I think, but it's not in DSM-4. And I think this is a way in which DSM-5 will hopefully advance to reflect what, you know, the way the field is thinking about these disorders. So these are disorders that appear to be closely related to OCD, not the same disorder. There are important differences between each of these disorders and OCD, but by putting them in the same chapter, we're conveying that these are probably related disorders, that you might assess them somewhat similarly. There's some overlaps in treatment. And the disorders that are proposed to be in this category are obsessive-compulsive disorder, body dysmorphic disorder, trichotillomania, hoarding disorder, which would be new to DSM-5, and possibly skin-picking disorder. We're not sure whether that will be in the main part of DSM or in what will be called Section 3, which will be a section of disorders for which more evidence is, scientific evidence is needed before they're in the main part of the manual. But we, the idea is to put them there to stimulate further research using an agreed upon definition.
Tell me a little bit about skin picking versus hair pulling, which I believe is trichotillomania. What's the difference?
Well, people with trichotillomania pull their hair in a recurrent way, and sort of make repeated attempts to stop the hair pulling, but find it difficult to stop the hair pulling. And it's often head hair, but it can really be hair from any part of the body. And skin picking really focuses much more on actually kind of excoriating the skin, kind of digging at the skin and picking at it. And there, it can actually be a pretty dangerous behavior because some people do extensive damage to their skin. It can be have a lot of medical, serious medical consequences. They're both similar disorders in that they both involve sort of a, they're both kind of habit disorders. They're not preceded by any particular cognition or thought. They're just habits, but they differ from just normal habits that we all have because they're very, the behaviors are pretty driven and, can't just be stopped because the person wants to stop them and can, you know, really do cause significant impairment for patients.
So what can you comment on the dimensions in DSM-5?
Sure. So, you know, DSM-4 really consists of primarily of categories of disorders, so obsessive compulsive disorder, panic disorder, these are categories. But the thinking is that DSM-5 could benefit from also including dimensions that cut, so various types of symptoms that cut across these disorders, things like depression, severity of depression, severity of anxiety. So you can have OCD, not have major depressive disorder, but still have a lot of depression, a lot of depressive symptoms. So the thinking is that, you know, by including these dimensions, and patients would complete self-report measures that would correspond to the dimensions, and in some case, the clinicians would rate the dimensions, but that they would add important information about some of these symptoms that occur kind of along a dimension of severity, and that would add useful information for clinicians when they treat patients.
You mentioned that the publication date is 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the current status of the publication? Anything more specific or when people might expect to see it in their doctor's offices?
Yes, well, I think by mid-year in 2013. It's still an ongoing process, and none of the proposed changes are final yet. That will happen by the end of this year, 2012. So the proposed changes are still undergoing a review process. There is very stringent, careful review of all of the work group's proposed changes to see, is the scientific evidence that's been published on that's relevant to the proposed changes, is that evidence sufficient to support the proposed changes? And then there's also, all the proposed changes are also being reviewed from the perspective of clinical and public health significance as well. And so that is an ongoing process. We're also still finalizing the text that accompanies the diagnostic criteria, which describes the disorders in more detail. We're still looking at reviewing data from some of the field trials that are coming in to see what extent they support the proposed changes, and the proposed changes will be posted again in May for the public to take another look at and give input on.
Thank you. We'll be following this and looking forward to the new DSM-5 sometime next year. This is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADA 8.